We want to know if you have a movie that you keep watching over and over again. Every time you watch it, you get something else out of it. It's a rewatchable movie. That's what we're talking about now with Mike Mayo.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. That movie you just keep coming back to. You can post on the Central Time Facebook page or email talk@WPR.org.
Mike Mayo joins us now. He's a movie critic and author of a number of books in the Video Hound series. Mike, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for inviting me. This is one of my absolute favorite topics. I love to talk about this kind of stuff.
Well, let's start it off. What is your favorite rewatchable movie?
Well, one that I just watched it again a week ago because it came out in a new, this really surprised me, a 20th anniversary Blu-ray disc. And I was just shocked to realize that it has been 20 years since The Fugitive came out. And this is the movie with Harrison Ford. Tommy Lee Jones won a Best Supporting Actor Academy Award for his work as the marshal who is chasing Harrison Ford. This is based on the old TV series from the 60s. And Harrison Ford is a Chicago doctor who is convicted of killing his wife. He's on the way to prison when there is a spectacular train crash, a real spectacular train crash, by the way, not a special effects train crash. And he gets free then and then spends the rest of the movie running from Tommy Lee Jones and trying to prove his innocence at the same time. It's an action movie that's got a lot of really good emotion, and it's really smartly put together. I just found myself enjoying it all over again and realizing what a well-crafted movie it is and just how involving it is. I even though I knew everything that was going to happen in it, I was just completely entertained all the way through.
You gave us a heads up on that one. We pulled a clip. Let's give a listen.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, listen up. We have a fugitive that's been on the run for 90 minutes. Average foot speed over uneven ground, barring injury, is 4 miles an hour. That will give you a radius of 6 miles. What I want out of each and every one of you is a hard target search of every gas station, residence, warehouse, farmhouse, hen house, outhouse, or doghouse in this area.
Clip there from The Fugitive, and Tommy Lee Jones being Tommy Lee Jones is as he does. Yeah, you're right. I can't believe it's been 20 years. That makes me feel really old, in fact.
I know, and looking at it really surprised me in the way movies have changed. I mean, lately, whenever you would have anything like that train crash, it would be done through CGI effects, which really weren't available then. Well, actually, they just became available that summer because The Fugitive was out in the summer of 1993 with Jurassic Park, the movie that really, I think, you know, really threw us into the whole world of digital effects, where things that we knew were impossible could seem photorealistic. That's the movie that changed everything. But The Fugitive was right out there with it, and it's every bit as enjoyable.
And I always worry when I go back and watch a movie, is it going to seem dated? Is it going to hold up? And you say, yeah, this one holds up pretty well.
Yeah, but what's funny is the things that are dated are he spends a lot of time searching for the famous one-armed man. All of that stuff now would be handled through Google searches and the internet, which does not come into play in the film at all. And it's a much more involving film because of that.
And what about you, Rob? What is one that you watch over and over?
All right, we pulled a clip of this one. I just rewatched the beginning of it the other day, Once Upon a Time in the West. Let's give a little listen here. Oh, goosebumps.
Frank? Frank sent us. Did you bring a horse for me? Looks like we're shy of one horse. You brought too many.
And then the shooting starts. That I have goosebumps right now. That's after a very long, slow buildup before you get to the action there. A favorite of mine. I love going back and watching that. Mike, what do you think?
I love that movie. That is one of the great Ennio Morricone scores all in his lengthy career. I think that may be my favorite of all of his. And they're referring to Frank there, and Frank is played by Henry Fonda,
yes,
in one of his few villainous roles, and he is so villainous in this.
He's a bad man.
He is just absolutely terrific in that movie. And if you ever get a chance to see that movie again on a big screen, it is such a big screen movie. Just all the great stuff that was done in Monument Valley, just an absolutely wonderful movie. I have watched it many, many times to my wife's dismay, and I hope that I will watch it again.
I was going to say, I've never heard of this movie, Rob, but now I know where you get your catchphrase, you are shy one horse.
You're shy one horse.
You're always saying that.
I do say that from time to time, actually. That's a movie I quote often. Do you have a favorite, Veronica? Go back to and watch.
I was thinking about this, and one that I love. It's not as, you know, old and legendary as yours, Rob, but I love the movie Smoke Signals. It was my introduction to Sherman Alexie and his writing, and I feel like there's something about it, just a sense of humor and the way that it shows the West and the guys on the bus heading down to Phoenix, Arizona. I love it. I think it's so evocative and funny. Funny, funny. Do you like that one, Mike?
I don't know this movie. Smoke Signals. Tell me about
it. Oh, yeah. You got to watch it. Well, it's by Sherman Alexie, and he is a Native American. And it's taken from his short story, This Is What It Means to Say Phoenix, Arizona. I think that's the name of the short story. And it involves a couple of kids on the Indian reservation, and one of the fathers dies, and they go on a road trip, a really broke road trip, because they have no money, down to pick up his ashes. And it's about what happens on the way. And it's a hilarious film, but it's also poignant.
I also haven't seen that one, so I'll have to check it out. We've got full phone lines. Mike, I want to get some more of your recommendations. But let's go to Joe in Oshkosh. Hi, Joe.
Hi there. I'm going to go kind of the opposite end as far as action, more along the lines of Smoke Signals. And this is George Clooney's, second best movie after Out of Sight, and his only foreign movie, in my opinion, and that's The American. And there's not much going on for the story as far as a lot of action, but he plays a hitman. But it's just a very well done in terms of cinematography and style. Just a very stylish movie, and I've watched it probably 5 times, and every time I pick up something subtle, which is just incredibly interesting to me. So,
I've seen that one. There's a lot of waiting, and then there's bursts of action, right?
Yep. And it starts off with a really strange scene up in Norway or someplace that really kind of sets the tone and the unsettling tone that movie has all the way through. I agree with Charles. It's a really nice movie.
And Micah, do you want to leave us with one more before we go into a quick break?
Yeah, this is, again, going in a completely different direction. A musical from 1998, I believe it was, the musical version of Hairspray, based on the Broadway play, but just so bright and funny, and John Travolta, and it's just terrific in it. So is Nikki Blonsky and Queen Latifah. This is one, again, I watched it just a couple of weeks ago, was charmed all over the place again, particularly the big dance number at the end. I just think this is one of those movies that you really can't look at again every few years, and you're going to see something more. And you can kind of show it to virtually any age group at all, and they will really, really like it.
And I've got a little bit of that one. Let's hear it.
Good morning,
we can let this one play us out into the break as we talk to Mike Mayo. He's written a bunch of the Video Hound books, including the Horror Show Guide. He's got a novel, Jimmy the Stick. We're talking about movies worth watching again and again. You can join at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
And I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking movies worth seeing again with film critic Mike Mayo.
And we want to hear from you. What is your go-to film for watching over and over? Because every time you watch it, you still love it. Call us at 1-800-642-1234. Maybe there's one that's become part of a family tradition. That's 1-800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Our producer Amanda Magnus says she watches Jaws every summer. before swimming. And the Blair Witch Project each year around Halloween. What's yours? 800-642-1234. We have Tim on the line in Ixonia. Tim, hi.
Hi. I like the movie. My favorite movie of all time is The Usual Suspect with Kevin Spacey. It's got a great storyline, great twist at the end, and I've seen it probably 100 times.
Why do you keep going back to it?
It's just that, I mean, it's like that great storyline. You pick up something that you missed the first time or the second time.
The twists and clues, yeah.
So one of the greatest lines of the movie is, I think, is he's like, how do you shoot the devil in the back? What if you miss, while he's on the boat? So, it's just those one-liners and things like that that just never gets old.
Thanks a lot for the call, Tim. As it happens, we have a clip. Our boss, Cheryl Gasser, that's one of her favorites to keep going back and watching. Usual Suspects.
Do you believe in him, Verbal?
Keaton always said, I don't believe in God, but I'm afraid of him. Well, I believe in God. And the only thing that scares me is Kaiser Soze.
Who's Kaiser Soze? Mike, a favorite of yours? Do you go back and watch that one?
Oh, yeah. And Tim's right. It has the great twist, but it doesn't just depend on the twist. Even if you know exactly where this movie's going, to follow along with it and to see how all the little clues are laid in, it is just so much fun and just a terrific ensemble cast of guys who were just on the cusp of being famous, including Kevin Spacey there, who, has some of the best work he has ever done. I agree. That is one that is really worth another look. And particularly if it's been a while since you've seen it, it really will surprise you in a lot of different places.
Mike, what do you watch again and again if you want something that's going to make you laugh?
Oh, well, I go back to what is probably my favorite Bill Murray movie, and that is Meatballs. It's one of the first movies he did with Ivan Reitman. It has got so many scenes that just make me laugh right out loud. No more than the famous "it just doesn't matter" scene at the end. I fall out of my chair every time he does that, and it just gets funnier and funnier and funnier as it goes along.
That's when I watched again and again as a kid and a teenager already. It's been a while, though. I went back and watched with friends a few years ago. Maybe it's worth pulling that one out again.
And I would add to that Ivan Reitman canon Ghostbusters, which think never gets old. Bill Murray's funny. Ivan Reitman's funny. Dan Aykroyd's funny. Everybody is funny.
And the effects are good. They may be a little dated in some ways now, but that movie is just, like you say, so much fun. It got all the really great New York locations, too, and everybody was just doing all of the right things in that movie. I agree. That's one that I go back to very regularly and enjoy it every time I see it.
Eric and Edgerton sent an email. I love the movie Clue. I keep finding something hidden that makes me laugh. Well, that's a special case because you can watch it three different times and see three different endings, right?
Yeah. And were they all? I know they're on the DVD, and I'm not sure how they did the VHS tape. That's one that I have not seen, I think, since it came out in theaters.
I saw it
a long time ago.
I saw it on VHS, I think. Yeah, and what they did was they ended the movie one way, and then you kept going and saw alternate ending one, alternate ending two, the three different whodunits.
Oh.
A weird idea.
All right, well, let's go back to the phones. We have Chris joining us in Green Bay. Hi, Chris.
Hi.
What's your choice?
The Big Lebowski.
Oh.
What do you like about it?
It's got to be Jeff Bridges, just the way he plays the Lebowski.
The dude.
The dude, yeah.
That's one that I don't know if I've seen the whole thing all the way through. Micah, how do you feel about The Big Lebowski?
I love The Big Lebowski. And about the third or fourth time you watch it, you can actually follow the plot. And there is a plot that actually kind of makes sense there. But you tend to get lost in it because there's so much else going on that is so funny. I mean, John Goodman, of course, kind of steals every scene that he's in. But Julianna Moore is just terrific. She is almost as good as all of the guys in it and just has some wonderful lines. And I know my favorite moment in that is that wonderful screwy dream sequence where they're bowling that is just so weird. And I don't know why, but that one just really gets to me every time I see it. But yes, the Big Lebowski is definitely one to watch over and over.
Chris, we'll raise a white Russian to you. Ruth,
yes.
Ruth is with us next in Ironwood, Michigan. Hi, Ruth.
Hey.
What's your movie?
I got actually a couple. Gods Must Be Crazy and Beasts of the Southern Wild.
Beasts of the Southern Wild. That's the newest movie I think we've talked about. Yeah, but that grabbed you and you've rewatched it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's a wonderful movie.
Well, it happens that one of our producers agrees with you, Galen Druk, and he said he watches that one again, and here's a clip from that one.
And it all goes quiet behind my eyes. I see everything that made me. Flying around in invisible pieces. I see that I'm a little piece of a big, big universe.
A clip from the trailer there. Mike, is that one? I'll admit, I have not seen that one. Have you caught that?
Yes, I have. And I have to admit, I do not love it as much as Ruth does. But it is just a phenomenal performance by that little girl that we heard there. And I'm not even going to try to pronounce her name because it is absolutely impossible for me to get out. But she is just so good in that movie. It's one of those remarkable things where you feel like this little girl is not acting at all. She is just completely being herself in front of the camera. And that's what powers the movie all the way through. And she really does make it worth watching.
What about The Gods Must Be Crazy? I remember watching and rewatching that at an era of my life, but I haven't gone back to it in a while.
That was one of those movies that became hugely popular, and it was right before we got into the whole video revolution thing. I remember that played in theaters for months and months and months, and it's kind of a goofy, almost slapstick at times comedies about this African bushman who finds a Coke bottle and thinks it is a gift from the gods. I have not seen that movie in so long that I don't really want to say anything about it because I don't remember it well enough.
Yeah. Well, it's good to bring it up again. Thanks, Ruth. And let's get another call in. How about Mike in Oak Creek? Hi, Mike. Mike, are you there? Looks like Mike has dropped, unfortunately.
Hi, can you hear me?
Oh, now you're there. Hey, Mike.
Hi there. I'm a fan of animated movies. And absolutely, my favorite of all time is The Iron Giant. A bit of fantasy, a bit of realism. I can watch it over and over and over. And, I've actually considered changing my middle name to Hobart.
Wow.
I saw that for the first time this year, and it's an intense movie for an animated movie. What do you think about that one, Mike?
Oh, yeah, very much. And this is, again, old-style conventional animation done before we got into all the computer stuff. And correct me if I'm wrong here, but isn't Brad Pitt the voice of the giant?
Do you know, Mike?
Yes.
Yeah, and he does a terrific job with it. And for any of our listeners who might not have seen it, it's about a giant who's a weapon, as it is, and from another planet, winds up on Earth and is befriended by this young boy, and it's about the relationship between them. And for this kind of movie to work, or anything like that, animated or live action, you've got to believe that relationship for the film to work for you, and you do. I mean, at least that's the way I remember it, and clearly Mike does too.
Thanks a lot for the call, Mike. Time for one more call. We've got Sean in La Crosse. Hi there, Sean.
Yeah, how's it going? Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. What's your movie?
What's Up, Doc? With Barbara Streisand and Ryan O'Neal and directed by
Peter Bogdanovich.
Yeah. Excellent movie. Slapstick. It introduced us to a lot of great characters, a lot of great actors like Kenneth Mars, Madeline Kahn. I could go on, and a lot of good phrases. I mean, I watched that. I've seen it 5 times in the theater, and I watch it like once a month. And
wow.
what I've been doing is like I've been trying to track the 5 Plaid cases to make sure that Peter got everything done right. You know, but I mean, it's just so funny because it's timeless. I mean, you know, the chase scene through San Francisco. I mean, not a lot has changed in San Francisco, except for, I mean, there's not all Volkswagen bugs driving around anymore.
Gotcha. Sean, thanks a lot for the recommendation. Mike, we're just about out of time. Can you leave us with one more that you keep coming back to?
Yeah, and this is a war movie from 1966, The Blue Max. Again, done before the advent of big special effects. It's set in World War One. It's a flying movie. Some of the best stunt flying you will ever see. James Mason is terrific as this kind of evil German officer who tries to use young pilot played by George Papard for his own means.
All right.
Well, just one of the best.
Mike, thank you so much. Been a lot of fun.
Thanks for inviting me. I'd love to talk about this.
That was Mike Mayo, movie critic, author of a number of books in the Video Hound series.
You're listening to Central Time on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Central Time on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Our next guest has spent a career fighting the status quo.
He's arguably the most well-known libertarian in America. He's been called by supporters a champion for individual liberty, a modern-day Thomas Jefferson. He's taken on government intervention ranging from the Federal Reserve to student loan programs.
Now he's taking on public education. Ron Paul is a former 12-term congressman from Texas and a three-time presidential candidate. His new book is called The School Revolution, A New Answer for Our Broken Education System. Congressman Paul, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. Nice to be with you.
Well, you've spent a lot of your career taking on government institutions. So why did you choose to confront education now?
Well, it's something I've been interested in for a long time, and I think education continues to get worse. But over my whole political career, I've talked a lot about education, believing that there aren't very many political solutions, the way Washington works. But Washington is a consequence of what the educational standards are. If you have people being taught one set of standards from grade school all the way up through college, they're going to believe in certain issues and what the role of government ought to be. And I've always believed that if you want to take on anything that you think Washington is doing wrong, you have to get people educated. A good example of this could be the Federal Reserve System. Nobody really paid any attention to it, yet I considered it very, very important. But I wasn't the kind that worked my way up through the seniority system in Washington and traded votes and that sort of thing. But by going outside of Washington, going to the universities and talking to the people interested in this, all of a sudden, with the slump in the economy, the Federal Reserve has become a very important issue. And those individuals who heard about it, put pressure on their congressmen. And the Congress actually has come around a bit, and we voted on it twice in the House to audit the Fed, and it passed both times. So that is what I believe in strongly, that education plays a key role. And after getting out of Congress, I thought, well, several people came to me and said, really the wave of the future is education over the internet and homeschooling and the different options that we have rather than what's going on in the regular school system because the results are so bad and there's such a uproar about how badly, things are going. And
one of the things about education right now is that there's so many conflicting notions about what the goal of education should be. What do you see as the goal of education?
Well, quite differently than what's in the public school system. I think in that system, it seems like the goal is to get a degree and get through school no matter what, but not have a plan. And they end up with a lot of people getting degrees, and because of the extra funding and subsidies, there are a lot of people who get these degrees, but they're not well motivated. They don't have a plan. The economy weakens. The individuals coming out of college have debt. So from grade school on up, it just seems to be a failure. My goal is that, especially, in the grade school and high school, will be to approach it differently and first get people to understand what a free society is all about, what liberty means and what responsibility means.
Well, how do you approach it differently?
Well, the first thing is the conditioning that we've had, for 150 years, is to condition the American people to believe that the government has a significant role in our lives, that the government has a significant role in the economy, and our government has a significant responsibility around the world. So they're taught intervention in all these areas, that we're responsible to go in and solve all the problems on the around the world, and we have an economic system which is based on intervention, which is called Keynesian economics, and it's failing. The economy is not very healthy, and this last recession is still with us. And also, people are sick and tired of, you know, the government not protecting our civil liberties. Just look at the uproar now once they found out what the government is doing with NSA. I mean, they have to know every single thing that we do, and people are getting annoyed with this. So the freedom system and the freedom philosophy says the individual is important. The individual should have the responsibility, not the group, not the state. And this is completely different. Responsibility is not for the government to make sure we get an education. Responsibility is on us and our family and our churches or whatever, but not the government, because they have failed at just about everything they've done.
Well, you're a proponent of homeschooling. You see that as one way that the individual can take responsibility for their child's education instead of the government. And I guess the obvious question there is who's going to quit working in order to educate the kids? Most people, especially in this difficult economy, they may not have that luxury.
You know that is right, and that is a challenge. And I talked this over with my wife. Our kids are all raised, and they all went through public school. But if the conditions were like they were today, I said, "Do you think we'd homeschool?" She said, "Probably not." She wasn't inclined to, nor was I, because I was so busy. I don't think everybody's going to be homeschooled. We're sort of targeting with our plan to go up to about 20%. Those individuals who want to have this responsibility are self-motivated and self-starters, and they can work this way and become leaders in a community. But they have to understand history a little bit differently. They have to understand economics differently. They have to know what the Constitution says and our traditions have said about our role around the world. I mean, we're in 130 countries. That's not our tradition. We don't need to do this, but it's accepted because that's what we've been taught. And I'd like to participate in trying to get people to at least think that there is an alternative. And it's getting easier to do this because everything seems to be failing around us. The school system is failing. Our medical system is messed up. The foreign policy is in shambles. And people are starting to recognize what a mess the Federal Reserve has made out of our economy. So there's an open door there and for us. And I think that there should be competition. There shouldn't be a monopoly on this. It shouldn't be run from the federal government on down. And, you know, now they're just moving along, Republicans and Democrats. The Republicans gave us No Child Left Behind. And now they're talking about the core curriculum. They're moving continuously in the direction of more centralized control. And most of us in our group, the Freedom Movement, believe that things should be local and individualized and family-oriented and based on self-reliance rather than depending on the government to take care of us.
Now, getting back to the 20% that you say could be homeschooled, what about the other 80% of kids that aren't homeschooled? What happens to them?
Well, they're going to be in the system that they have, we have today, until somebody else comes up with a better school system and modifies that, which would mean that you would have to get the federal government out of the way. But that's not easy. I can't wait for that. I mean, generations, we've been going in the wrong direction, and it's going to get, you know, a lot worse until we go bankrupt. The schools now depend on federal money. The federal government has no money. You know, all they have is debt, and they borrow money and they print money. So it'll be self-limiting because this system that we have where we think that you can borrow endlessly and that you can borrow as much as you need, and if you don't have enough, you just print the money. Well, that is a foolish notion, but that's what's going to happen, and those people in the schools are going to have a lot of trouble because so much every year they get more money in the public school system and it goes into administration.
Now, you're talking about getting kids to think freely, and you were brought up, not brought up on, but you've spent a long time learning about libertarian values and pursuing that. One of the things that schools, I think, would say that they do is that they bring a variety of perspectives and the goal is to try to teach the child critical thinking so they can make that choice. Should children be given a variety of schools of thought.
See, I don't think that's happened. I think that almost everybody that leaves the system, has a belief that government has this major role, and that's why 95% or 98% of the members of Congress believe that's the responsibility of government. It's not the responsibility of families and individuals and local government. It's always the responsibility of federal government. So, no, I don't think they have produced this. I've often said that, I had natural tendency to be very freedom-oriented, and then I think it was beaten out of me by the system. So as I went through schools and the movies and the press and TV, everything said, no, you're not it. The government has to do this. But then I went through a period of time of searching to overcome that obstacle, and it was very, very hard. We didn't have an internet. It was hard to find the books. There were very few think tanks. But I finally found a few and found the right books to read and study. But it was in spite of what the government gave me. The government always got in my way until I finally discovered Austrian economics and libertarianism. And lo and behold, it was very similar to what the founders set up for us. You know, the Constitution is very close to what I'm talking about because they didn't write in the Constitution that we could have a Department of Education, you know, those kind of things. And we would like to... in this program, teach kids that that there is a different system, that the status quo isn't working well, and it's really not part of our traditions.
Now, going back to that question of responsibility for education, you rest it largely with the family. And some families, they're equipped to create good educational environments for their kids, and others may not be. There may be a disability in the family, absent parents, what have you. Does society have a responsibility to those kids?
Not society. Society. Who is society? If society is always responsible, that just means that you send your elected official to go and take it from your neighbor. Society is somebody that has to pay for it. But whoever controls society, whoever is in charge, and that's always political. That's a political football. And whoever has the strongest lobbyist right now, society is taking care of the kids in public schools. And the NEA is the strongest lobbying around, and they get all the money they want. Washington, D.C. is a perfect example of what happens. That is a federal city, and we have that responsibility. But it's a lousy education. There's more crime and guns and everything else. It's such a mess. But every year they come back to the Congress and said, well, we're having a lot of problems. We need more money, and money is not the answer. These homeschool kids are getting educated for about $1,000 a year or less. And they're spending $15,000 or more in some of these public schools, and the results aren't very good.
We're speaking now with former 12-term congressman from Texas, Ron Paul, about his new book. It's called A School Revolution, A New Answer for Our Broken Education System.
We'll take a look at the headlines, then we'll be back with more on schools and politics with Ron Paul. You're listening to Central Time.
I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time. We continue our conversation now with Ron Paul about his new book, The School Revolution, A New Answer for a Broken Education System.
Yeah, we've got a caller on the line. Let's take Michelle from Green Bay. Hi, Michelle.
Hi. I have a question. Where's our responsibility to one another? Why is the individual the highest good? In my tradition, my religious background, the way I was raised was that we have an obligation towards one another in this society, and we can't just look out for ourselves and our nuclear families, but that we have to think about the well-being of people that we don't even know for the good of our society. And I don't hear any room for that, and I would be appalled if my children were learning in school the kinds of things that Ron Paul is espousing about championing the individual over anything else.
All right.
Where's our
No, I think very much what she says is very true, because I think it would be a terrible society that where there was no concern. And where I draw the line is that concern and humanitarian instincts is an individual instinct, and governments don't do a very good job because governments end up being corrupted. The people who have the most money get control of it. The lobbyists control this, so it's all well-intended. But no, the individual is responsible for oneself. The family is responsible. People should have humanitarian instincts. And I agree. The people who disagree with me now, like the lady, believe that they have humanitarian instincts and I don't. But we're, what they can't defend are the results. I mean, they can't defend the results of this educational system. They can't defend the results of our foreign policy, where the assumption is that we have to have this instinct to take care of the world and police the world. Look at what's happening around the world. And this humanitarian instinct of spreading this goodness is, it drives these people who tell people how they should run their personal lives, their sexual lives, their social lives, their religious lives, and they get involved, then all of a sudden they have people do things that aren't very good. So I think her instincts are good, but I think it has to be done with voluntarism and no coercion and no force, where the public school system is based first on compulsion. Everybody's, you know, compelled to go to school. Then everybody has to conform in school. And then they destroy curiosity and creativity by the way they regiment the school. And I think it destroys this whole instinct. If you depend on the government to do it, you have to give up your liberty in order for the government to take this role of the parent. And that's what I don't want. But I have firm convictions that the world would be a better place if we didn't use government coercion to achieve the goals that she would like to achieve.
As I understand it, you're happy with your education. You were prepared. You went on to medical school. You've been a doctor for many years. And I assume that your schooling prepared you for that medical degree. And you're talking about, you know, for 20% of kids, taking them out of school, placing them in the hands of their parents who aren't, for the most part, trained teachers. Isn't that, you know, doing them a disservice when you're taking the professionalism out of education?
Well, compared to what? Some people aren't cut out for it. I wasn't cut out to teach at home. But if some parents are, and they're sick and tired of the danger of being in school and exposing their kids to drugs and violence and a poor education, then, you know, it's not very difficult. So if you don't think parents can do it, and some of us don't want to do it, they don't do it. So it's a voluntary thing. But the results are just overwhelming right now. It's cheaper. It's better. These kids are doing so much better. Some of them are getting into college when they're 15 and 16, doing quite well. But, you know, I did point out that the public school system that I have, although I got through it, it was almost in spite of it, because when I wanted to learn sound economics, I had to really search because it wasn't taught. So the people who say, no, we don't want to put so much reliance on a free society and on this freedom philosophy, they can go elsewhere and they can have a home school that teaches them authoritarianism and not voluntarism. And that would be free under my system. My system allows, you know, total choices to be made. Is what I reject is the coercion by a few who say that we have to have the kind of foreign policy we have, that we have to have the policing of personal habits, like what the drug war has done to us. What a devastation from this type of motivation. And also the results of the economy and the financial system now, is the problems we have there are only beginning, and people think we're in a rough recession right now. Well, if they understood Austrian economics, they'll realize why the correction is not over. It hasn't really begun yet.
Now, we're running short of time here, but I do want to ask you, something you hear from people who might disagree with your policies is, you know, I respect him for knowing what he believes in. What do you think that says about politicians today? Is it rare that they're driven by personal conviction?
Only a few times, and this is where the ones I found I had the most fun with in Congress. And that is, if I could find an honest constitutionalist conservative libertarian, I could work with him. And if I could find a progressive Democrat who was honest about the issues, like a Dennis Kucinich and others, I would work with them, because they would agree with me on the foreign policy and they would agree with me on civil liberties. But where the real annoyance comes from is this dedication to the partisanship. It's, you know, when it comes to the important issues, the parties are exactly alike. You know, just recently, you know, the question about whether we should start bombing and doing things in Syria, Republican and Democratic leadership agreed with it. When it came to reining in NSA, guess what? The Republicans and the Democrats both agreed with that and worked hard to keep that amendment from passing. But now there's a growing number of a new coalition coming together with progressive Democrats and libertarians on the issues that we agree with. And I find that very encouraging. This whole issue of partisanship, it's a pretense that there's a major difference between the two parties in these elections for president that make a big difference. You know, everybody was hoping that, our current president would be less authoritarian, on the drug war, and that he wouldn't be as militant overseas. And he's the one that says we have to start bombing another country. And conservatives, they're supposed to cut back on spending. And they go in and they like to spend money like Democrats. So there's a lot of frustration there on the partisanship, which makes no sense to me.
Well, Congressman Paul, we're out of time, but I want to thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
We've been speaking with former Congressman and three-time presidential candidate Ron Paul. His new book came out yesterday, and it's called The School Revolution, A New Answer for Our Broken Education System.
Well, coming up tomorrow here on Central Time, we'll talk with the captain of the Madeline Island Ferry Line on our Hidden Wisconsin segment. I've been on the ferry there, Veronica. You?
I've been on the ferry in lovely, calm waters. I'd love to hear what it's like in winter or, in the fall when you might get a little bit of chop on the ferry.
It may be hard to park that thing, is my understanding, but we'll get the details from him. And this is one I know is close to your heart. We're going to hear about the hidden world of mushroom hunters who harvest fungi from the woods for cash. I'd be really careful about that. In fact, I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't know what to pick.
That's probably a smart thing. We'll find out about the people who do know what to pick tomorrow on Central Time. And don't forget, if you want to comment on what you've heard today, you can head over to the Central Time Facebook page and leave us your thoughts. We'd love to hear from you. This is Central Time.